From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Today we hear personal stories from Iowans with disabilities. My guests will include the editors of and contributors to a new collection of essays by 17 authors who have a disability or provide support as a parent or other caregiver. The book is called From My Perspective, and it was produced by the nonprofit The Spectrum Network, which provides customized employment services and daily living assistance to Iowans with disabilities, substance abuse, mental illness, and other barriers. We'll also talk with students who studied the book for a class at Wartburg College. Do you have a disability? Are you a caregiver? What's your perspective? Our conversation starts right after this news. It's The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. And today on our program, we hear personal stories from Iowans with disabilities and also from caregivers. My guests include the editors of and contributors to a new collection of essays by 17 authors who have a disability or provide support as a parent or other caregiver. The book is called From My Perspective, Essays About Disability. It was produced by the Spectrum Network. That's a nonprofit which provides customized employment services and daily living assistance to Iowans with disabilities, substance abuse, mental illness, and other barriers. We'd also like to have you join our conversation this hour. Perhaps you have a disability, or you're a caregiver for someone who has a disability. What's your story? What's your perspective? Perhaps you can give us an insight, share that with us, that may not widely be known. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.com. We're also on Twitter, at IPR Talk. Joining us, first of all, Chris Shanilek. She's the project manager of this project and co-editor of the book. Good afternoon to you, Chris.
Good afternoon, and thanks for having us on the show.
Great to have you. With you at the studios of KUNI, the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Cedar Falls, Tony Smith, executive director of the Spectrum Network. Welcome to our program.
Thank you. We're pleased to be here.
And also the third one of you there, Sharla Hodgman, author of one of the essays in this book titled Challenging Obstacles. Sharla, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, and it's Hageman.
Hageman, I'm sorry, forgive me.
That's okay. You're forgiven.
Sharla, let me start with you. As one of the essays in here that I've enjoyed reading, I wonder if you have the collection there. If you'd like to do a combination of whatever you choose of telling us about the topic of your essay, perhaps first sharing with us the nature of your disability.
Well, I have anxiety disorder, and so when you have something exciting as this, it was kind of a little up and down.
And then the host goes and mispronounces your name, so that raises the anxiety, doesn't it?
Sometimes.
You're doing fine. So anxiety disorder, how far back does this go? How far back do you remember this in your life?
Way back to 1994.
Mm-hmm. Was there a triggering event?
Yes. It kind of triggered when my dad passed away, and something he said triggered it.
That's something you share in your essay. I don't know. Would you like to read? I think that's on the first page of your essay, and we can better understand that. Would that work?
That'll care. Okay. Let me get it.
Okay. Sharla, please do. Sharla Hageman with us, along with Chris Shanilek. Perhaps while Sharla's looking for that, we can turn to Chris and have you tell us, Chris, what was the inspiration for creating this collection?
The inspiration from it came about when we were planning some awareness-building activities for the Spectrum Network's 35th anniversary last year. And the idea of doing a writing workshop really appealed to us because storytelling and writing is really well-suited to putting ourselves in other people's shoes. And I remember when I brought the idea to Tony thinking, you know, this is I'm very interested in hearing about people associated with the Spectrum Network who have disabilities or are part of the community about what sort of obstacles they've encountered and how they've overcome them or perhaps not overcome them and found some other way to negotiate them.
Mm-hmm. Charlotte, do you have that reading ready from your essay?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead and please do any explaining you need to as well.
Okay. I'm just going to read a couple of paragraphs from the book, and this is what I wrote. I was challenged by a lot of obstacles. My dad was an alcoholic. My dad went on a 3-week drunk, and the last thing he said was, I am leaving and I'm never coming back. As he left out the back door, he slammed that door so hard that he broke the glass. He came back 3 days before my mom passed away. When I was 16 years old, my dad told me that I was a fat elephant. No man would ever love me. This really tore me up. First, I confronted my dad with what he said when he was drunk, and he argued with me that he did not say it. After that, I cried. Those words hurt me so much that I decided to put a wall up around myself and not let any man into my life so I would not be hurt again from someone that I loved.
And, Charlotte, we learn later on in your essay that you did, in fact, find a man you could become close with after this traumatic experience in your life. And also, you work at the Spectrum Network now, don't you?
No, I used to work there.
Okay. When you wrote this essay, did it take some time to come up with the words? This is a moment in your life you don't like to think about, and I'm sure, would rather not have happened. What did it feel like to write this down on paper and express it so others could read and perhaps understand, learn from it?
Well, it was kind of difficult at first. It was kind of hard to pick out their areas of your life and write them down, you know, because a lot of it happened so many years ago, you know. And the writing project was quite interesting, and I was kind of had a little bit of anxiety about that because I didn't know how things were going to go. Once I know how things go, then I get right calmed down.
What was the turning point for you to know that you could write this essay, that it would work, you could express yourself?
When the Spectrum Network gave us the opportunity to be able to express ourselves. Because out there in the world, a lot of people don't want to deal with people with disabilities, so you kind of get the door shut in your face.
It's ignored.
My mom was that way. She would say those people, and I didn't understand what she meant by those people until I started training at the Spectrum Network in 1994 and 5, right around in there, and I found out that she was totally wrong, because when I first came there, there was one girl that I just love her to this day, but she would hug me every day, and I'm not much of a huggy person, but I found out differently. They were better friends than friends I have normal.
Mm. What do you want to tell us about the group of people with disabilities, including yourself, that we might not know, that might help us include you in more of the normal life and not create the awkward situations that come about and the hurtful situations?
Well, just if you have a disability, make yourself known. Get help for yourself. There are places like the Spectrum Network that do that all the time. They help people, you know, find jobs, and a lot of people that know about people with disabilities would rather hire a person with disabilities because they can work just as well as anybody else.
This would be a good time to invite Tony Smith, Executive Director of the Spectrum Network, to tell us a little bit more about the network. It's something that I'm sure listeners are hearing about perhaps for the first time, even though you're working with many, many people with disabilities in Iowa. Tell us more about the network.
The network is a mission-driven, not-for-profit organization. We serve about 100 people. The services that we provide are everything from job training at work sites in the communities to helping people find jobs and to help them maintain them. We also have a day program which helps people integrate into the community. We're concerned about people's health issues and their social issues. And then we also provide a support service in individuals' homes. And that helps them to maintain a healthy lifestyle, a safe place to live, and to participate in their communities.
In what counties in Iowa are you active?
We are based in Winneshiek County, but we provide services to people from 10 counties.
Mm-hmm. How are you funded?
Mostly with government funding, which is not a popular topic among organizations like us these days. Most of the people that we serve fall within the Medicaid Title 19 eligible income range. And we do some fundraising, we do some grant writing, and we will be working on more of that than we ever have before.
Mm-hmm. Sharla mentions in her essay about working as well and overcoming, dealing with her anxiety disorder. How important is it that people with disabilities find meaningful work? How can it help not only them but us?
Everybody in this world has the right to a place to live. They have a right to know where their next meal is coming from, and they have the right to have a date on Saturday night. That's the mantra we use.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't make any difference if I have a disability today or I had one or I'm going to have one next week. I mean, you don't know in this world. That doesn't make any difference. I have the right to that. I have want that. And that is very clearly what our organization is all about.
Mm-hmm. We have to take a short break in a minute, but tell us what are the biggest barriers that people with disabilities are facing when they want to be employed and they approach an employer and they have a disability. Is it best to sort of be upfront about it? And I imagine so.
In some regard, if you're not if I were that interviewer person being interviewed, if I was uncomfortable with that, I would not. It depends on your comfort level. It depends on what the job is.
Mm-hmm. So you don't necessarily want to communicate that before you get an interview. I can imagine you might not get an interview if you communicate that in a cover letter, for instance.
If it will make a person feel more comfortable about applying for a job on the merits of their application, on the merits of their strength for that job, their passion for that job, then the disability is really an irrelevant issue.
Okay. We want to continue our conversation about people with disabilities, Iowans with disabilities, and the insights that we're learning from them from a new collection of essays by 17 authors who have a disability or provide support as a parent or other caregiver. The title of the book is called From My Perspective, Essays About Disability, produced by the Spectrum Network. That's a nonprofit organization which provides customized employment services and daily living assistance to about 100 Iowans with disabilities, substance abuse, mental illness, and other barriers. We'd like to have you join our conversation. Perhaps you have a disability you'd like to share with us. Perhaps you're a caregiver of someone who has a disability. I'd like to share an instance that will lend us some insights. What's your perspective? Tell us your story. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about how these essays were written with Rachel Faldet of Luther College. This is The Exchange. We'll be back in 1 minute. My Perspective is the title of the book, a new collection of essays about disability, written by 17 authors who have a disability or provide support as a parent or other caregiver, and produced by the nonprofit The Spectrum Network. And if you would like to join our conversation, tell us about your disability, or if you're a caregiver, how that has affected your life, your perspective, your story. 1-866-780-9100. Perhaps how our society treats, views people with a disability and what we've done that has been better than in years past and where we still have to go. I want to talk about that a little bit later in the program. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Or email us theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Joining us is Sharla Hageman, the author of one of the essays in the book, Challenging Obstacles. She has an anxiety disorder, and she illustrates that with her story in the book. Chris Shanilek is the project manager and co-editor of the book. Tony Smith, executive director of the Spectrum Network, joining us from Iowa Public Radio Studios at KUNI. I want to invite into our conversation now Rachel Faldet, assistant professor of English at Luther College in Decorah, one of the editors of this book. Rachel, good afternoon. Welcome to our program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be part of the conversation.
So you've been listening into the first part here.
I have been, yes.
Let me ask you about, because you led the writing workshops, you co-edited this book, a lot of first-time writers here. How did you approach the writing of these essays with these 17 authors?
Well, I approached working with them as I would with any writing student that I've worked with. I've taught at Luther for over 20 years now, working with writers, and when Sharla was talking about having a sense of anxiety at the beginning of the writing workshop, I think she was joined by many people in the room who were feeling anxious and excited at the same time because no one knew what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I told everybody to not be afraid of making mistakes and just to write down their ideas, to tell their stories, tell their truth as they understood it. And everybody got a notebook and a pencil. And for people who felt more comfortable speaking their stories out loud rather than writing them down, we had some scribes in the room who would write down their story for them as they spoke. And so they wrote for our workshop lasted about 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
We had a break. At the end of that, we collected their stories and had them typed up. And then we had part two for our workshop where several weeks later, after I had read them and commented on them, I gave them back to them and asked them to tell me more about things that they had talked about.
Mm-hmm. How did people come into this workshop? Were they selected? Did they apply?
They were invited to participate in it. We wanted a range of Spectrum clients as well as some people who had helped in the beginning to get Spectrum started, some teachers and some parents of people who have a disability. So we wanted a range of voices. So we wanted it to be, I would say, like a chorus of voices, and we wanted people's essays to stand alone as individual pieces, but then work well in a collection to talk about, as you've been saying, you know, having a disability or assisting someone who has a disability.
Mm-hmm. A wide range of disabilities
mm-hmm.
represented
right.
in these essays.
Mm-hmm.
What are, though, even though it's a wide variety of disabilities, the common themes that you could pick out in these essays?
Well, one thing that I was impressed with was the honesty of the writers, that people weren't afraid to talk about their disability.
Mm-hmm.
And the disabilities were a wide range, and some were anxiety, and some were, you know, other things that they maybe didn't specify as much as Sharla did in her piece. So I think, you know, the best answer I could give that is that people should read the book and learn the variety of disabilities that are covered.
So from the get-go, from that very first meeting, it surprises me that people were really didn't have a problem getting to the core of talking about their disability and sharing it. It came out.
They were so honest, and they were so specific. I was so impressed by memories when, you know, Sharla said that it took her a while to kind of dig back into her past to remember those things. But I think once, like Sharla had her, you know, pencil when she was writing, I think it just, you know, it came to her as she started thinking about it. And I think that happened to a lot of people. And again, there were some people who, you know, kind of got stuck. And so then I was going around the room and Chris was going around the room too. And we were just, you know, talking with people and trying to help them, you know, get over that, temporary writer's block.
Mm, interesting. Talking about disabilities today, writing down your disability, a way to understand it better and help others understand how disabilities are dealt with in our society. We want you to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Tell us your story if you have a disability. Perhaps you're a caregiver of someone with a disability. 1-866-780-9100. Sarah is joining us from Dubuque. Good afternoon, Sarah.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I listen all the time. I suffered from clinical depression most of my adult life, and I think clinical depression is so misunderstood as it compares to situational depression. And when situational depression, you know, some kind of stressor triggers it, like a death or,
mm-hmm.
or you know, we hear a lot about postpartum depression, where clinical depression is, you know, something in the physicality of your brain, you know, making you depressed. And I think there's this sort of stigma, I mean, I know there's a stigma against, you know, that it's a weakness or something you can somehow control, but pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You know, the people who use medication, you know, that somehow it's third week. You know, like if you were a diabetic, you take medication. That's not considered a weakness.
Mm-hmm. What do you, Sarah, when you meet people and, you know, get to know them well enough to share your disability with them and you encounter this attitude, how do you counter that? How do you react to that misunderstanding of clinical depression?
Well, that's actually a good question. I remember speaking with this woman I used to work with, and I confided in her. Because I couldn't think of a lie quick enough when she asked me what my appointment was. And because there's a lot of shame involved. And I said, she said, well, what do you have to be depressed about? You know, you have this great husband, and you have this wonderful, healthy child, and everything you'd ever want. And I said, absolutely nothing. I have nothing to be depressed about. I'm probably the happiest depressed person you'll ever meet. I have no angst in my life, nothing's wrong, but I am depressed, and she just couldn't understand it, that it's a lack of energy, that there's no joy in anything, that there's a, you know, you're trying to live your life and enjoy it, and there's the chemistry in your brain is debilitating. And then when you finally can figure out the medication, which is a very painstaking process, and that's why a lot of depressed people, you know, go untreated, then you're like, okay, now I know what, you know, life's supposed to feel like, and, you know, you're not deliriously happy all the time, but you're able to, you know, I tell people, imagine if every time you had to go get the mail, or go to work, or even go on a date, or go to a party, things that are fun, things that are mundane, things that aren't fun, imagine every time you had to do anything, you had to climb over a huge pile of garbage to get there. You probably wouldn't want to do it.
Right. Do you trust yourself going out planning things?
As far as
knowing when your depression will be worse than at other times. So if you got
it. I've gotten pretty good at noticing when it's coming on. For instance, suddenly everything will seem pointless. You know, what's the point of it all? Why are we all here? Why do people do the things they do? Everything starts to become meaningless, and that's usually a good sign, and my husband notices it too. He's like, uh-oh.
Red flag. Mm-hmm.
And so I've gotten pretty good at, but sometimes, you know, it just comes and it attacks you. I'm depressed about being depressed. You know, that's what happened to me. Nothing helped happen to me, but the depression came and got me, and that's kind of how I look at it now, rather than me thinking I'm a lemon and I'm no good and why can't I function, and which can, you know, obviously lead to further depression.
Sarah from Dubuque, I want to thank you for calling up and sharing your experience with your disability, clinical depression, and we hope you continue making good progress with that disability.
Thank you. And I really have. I'm actually very doing really well, so thank you very much.
Wonderful. Sarah calling from Dubuque. We're going to take a short break in a minute. If you'd like to join our conversation about disabilities, we're taking the cloak off of these to some extent. We don't talk about these things. We look away, as some of these essays point out, in From My Perspective. That's the title of this new collection of essays, From My Perspective, Essays About Disability. We have a number of guests coming up also on our program to talk about these instances that those people with disabilities or without disabilities can learn from. If you'd like to join the conversation with your snippet of a life with a disability that might have a lesson attached, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. I'm Ben Kiefer. We'll be back in just a few minutes. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Over the noon hour, thank you for joining us. Earlier this month in Iowa City, a group of kids, some as young as 12 years old, were arrested during a gang initiation ritual. Tomorrow during this hour, we'll talk about gang activity in Iowa, what's being done to stop it. We'll talk with the founder and CEO of Creative Visions in Des Moines. Part of that group's mission is to work with at-risk youth and families affected by gangs. Also tomorrow on our program, a conversation with a man who just finished serving time in prison for gang-related activities. That's The Exchange tomorrow over the noon hour at this time on Iowa Public Radio's news stream. Today we're listening to personal stories from Iowans with disabilities, also from caregivers. My guests include the editors and contributors to a new collection of essays by 17 authors, Iowans who have a disability or provide support as a parent or other caregiver. The book is called From My Perspective, Essays About Disability. It's put out by the Spectrum Network, a nonprofit organization which provides customized employment services and daily assistance to Iowans with disabilities, substance abuse, mental illness, and other barriers. So we're asking you, our listeners, to chip in your stories. If you have a disability, tell us a little slice of your life that we may understand what it's like to be living with your disability and how you interact with the world and how that interaction might be improved. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. In our first half hour, Sharla Hageman was with us she's one of the essayists in this book, also Chris Shanilek, the co-editor of their book, with us, so we want to thank them for joining us. Tony Smith is still with us, executive director of the Spectrum Network. Rachel Faldet, we want to thank her, but joining our group now, Joanne Hagen, author of one of the other essays in this book. We'll talk to you in a moment, but Joanne, welcome to our program.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Also with us, Dr. Tammy Fox, Assistant Professor of Social Work at Wartburg College. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
And Heather Hackman, a social work major at Wartburg College. Heather, I understand you're a senior at Wartburg.
Yes, I am.
Okay, very good. I want to talk first of all with Joanne, if I may. All of you joining us from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Cedar Falls, the author of your essay, Joanne, the title of your essay is Rights Versus Responsibilities. Very interesting essay because you do not have a disability. You're a caregiver. Your essay gives us the perspective of you as a mother of a girl with a disability. Tell us your story, or if you'd like to read a passage, do that.
Okay. Well, this happened probably over 20 years ago, and my daughter was becoming a very shapely teenager, and I was concerned about sexual activity. As you may know, people with disabilities have a greater risk of being abused or taken advantage of. So as she became a teenager, I was very concerned about what I could do to prevent the risk of pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. Joanne, can you tell us, first of all, the nature of your daughter's disability?
She's autistic with retardation, and so she looks very normal, and she sounds very normal, but her abilities are very, very limited. Someone needs to be kind of around her 24/7 because she can't – language is probably her major deficit, so she can't explain – she can't tell you what happened. All of her communication, she's not able to be accurate. So I learned to not look at it as lying because she just doesn't know. And so half the time she can tell you accurately, but half the time she's not accurate. So you need to know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I was very concerned about this aspect. And she became interested in boys, of course. And so actually we developed a relationship with a counselor from Planned Parenthood who did classes on sexuality for disabled people. And so my story is about one of those encounters. Shall I read just a bit here?
Please do it. This is Joanne Hagen, author of the essay Rights Versus Responsibilities from the new collection called From My Perspective. Joanne.
Okay, so I heard about a new process, a surgical process that's not invasive, didn't require an incision, but it would decrease the menstrual flow significantly and result in eliminating the possibility of pregnancy. And so I was quite excited about this method of birth control. And I shared this new possibility with the counselor. And then she dropped the bombshell. You know, you're talking about taking away her right to reproduce. What? I replied. I could not believe my ears. What about the child? Who would take care of a baby if she reproduced? I would have given anything to have a daughter.
It's okay, Joanne. It's, we see here. Let's talk to Dr. Tammy Fox with us, School of Social Work at Wartburg College. These are very important things to deal with. Now we have a caregiver here struggling with the rights of her own daughter, the wishes she would have had for her daughter. How are you putting these essays to work when training someone for social work?
This past May term, we had a class focusing on people with different abilities, and we called it working with disabilities. Then, as I was developing the class, quickly learned that disability focuses primarily on what's wrong with the person, whereas we really wanted to be putting the person first. Mm-hmm. So what we were trying to do through this class was really helping the students, who are primarily social workers, take a look at how in their professional lives, as well as potentially in their personal lives, they could look at the person first and not just focus on the disability. So we're really trying to sensitize students to all the possibilities that were out there as opposed to all of the limitations. I chose this book because I had heard about it from a student from Wartburg who was actually up at Spectrum for part of her social work field placement. She had mentioned that she had been a part of writing this book, so I wanted to. She was one of the people who helped people to tell their stories. So we took a look at this and really appreciated the sense of inclusion and the sense of real life, and the very person-first perspective. Mm-hmm. Joanne's story is one of the ones that the students commonly mentioned as being very powerful, just hearing about the real side of different abilities.
Right, and Joanne's situation is perfectly understandable. Joanne, I don't know if you want to continue with that, but it boils down to a question you bring up very starkly in your essay. You as a potential grandmother, when a person cannot take care of themselves, your daughter, for example, she needs care all the time. Do they have a right to have children? And when you face that starkly as someone who will bear the load of that potential offspring, it's a much different question than some theory, isn't it, Joanne?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And the conclusion that I come to, that it's for her benefit, as well as relieving my burden, but it's also for her benefit. If you can just imagine going through a pregnancy and then having a child taken away from you when you've tried to grapple with what's happening to your body. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that that predicament should be taken off her shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Well, what does our law say about it? What might need to change with our law?
I did a little internet search yesterday, and apparently in Iowa now you can go to court, and if the court, it requires several steps, the caregiver, the individual person, of course, and some outside sources that are looking at the situation. All that information can be given to a judge, and a court can allow a sterilization to be legal. That's my understanding of what came up on the internet yesterday in Iowa. It also was clear that every state has different requirements. So, and the story that I was telling happened in California probably 20 years ago. And frankly, I couldn't find anything on the internet about California yesterday. So I don't know what's current there now.
Joanne Hagen is author of one of the essays in this new book, From My Perspective. Her title of her essay, Rights Versus Responsibilities. Heather Hackman, you are majoring in social work at Wartburg College, and your class has been using this book. What is the takeaway for you from this experience, meeting the authors and reading their essays? What's going to stay with you lifelong?
Well, I take a lot away from this book, actually, and meeting the authors as well. I work with people with disabilities currently, and so it kind of hit me both professionally as well as personally. I really enjoyed meeting all the authors and kind of bringing their stories to life, although I kind of felt like I knew them a lot from reading the book because it was so personal. But actually putting in, a name and a face together was very beneficial. It was really great being able to sit there and ask them questions about their stories, how they came up with the ideas to write their stories. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed that. It really helped me actually with the field of disabilities as well, because a lot of the times with some of the people I work with, they're not as well verbal, or they can't always tell me exactly how they're feeling. So it's kind of beneficial to kind of know, to take a step back and just kind of see things from their perspective, you know, try to learn more about the person first and not necessarily the disability.
Can you give me an instance, Heather, excluding the ones we've heard about, Joanne's and Charla's, an image, a dialogue that will stay with you from this collection?
Well, my favorite one actually was from Kathy Donovan called Walking in Someone Else's Shoes, and she kind of works with people with disabilities and was talking about kind of what all from my perspective actually means. She wasn't sure what to really write about as she was going through, but then she kind of realized you really have to walk in someone else's shoes, and she kind of realized what the meaning of that really was when she actually said that she had appendicitis. So when she realized that she needed to rely on other people for transportation, I mean, it's not just a disability. It was, you know, she needed other things, as other supports as well. So not people just with disabilities have issues that they need to overcome.
Okay, let's go back to the calls. You can tell us about your disability or if you're a caregiver, how that's affected you. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. To Greg in Waterloo, to use Heather's words, Greg, I wonder if you could tell us about the shoes you walk in.
I have found out I had a bipolar condition when I was in college in my undergrad. They didn't quite tell me what it was. But I went on, and it ended up manifesting itself and becoming a big part of my life, and where I was cycling quickly. And I ended, actually, I worked in television and radio and found out I had to leave that because it made it worse. And then I ended up switching careers, and I've been on disability for a year. I have my own disability policy about years ago. And I slowly have worked my way back to working full-time. I'll tell you, it's terrible when you take these different medicines and they work for a while and then they quit working and you go into severe depression or you go to severe manic states to where you don't even know what you're doing in your manic state, and you could do things that could be very bad for you in the future.
Mm-hmm. You said, Greg, you discovered this in your college years. How many years back is that?
Well, I'm 44.
Okay.
So we really didn't know what it was, and then in my later 20s, they said, well, this is what you had. I've been going to counseling for being depressed and anxious, and then they found out I also had SAD because I was doing well, and the seasons changed. I went into severe depression, and I'm not suicidal, but at that time, I almost was suicidal.
Greg, and, you know, from your point of view, with this span of 20 to 30 years since the onset of bipolar, or at least your awareness of it, do you think our society does a better job of dealing with this disability, mental illness, and including and understanding your illness, including you in society?
No, I don't. I've worked with people with disabilities, and I think it's very difficult because they don't see you in a wheelchair, or they don't see you with some type of, you know, to them, they're like, well, there's nothing wrong with you. Like one of your callers earlier said, you know, pull up by the bootstraps. They don't understand it. My employer now, I've told employers I have it, and some have been very, very good in working with me and understand, and they'll say, we understand if you have to take a day, you know, home. If I don't tell them, I can't use ADA to where, you know, I need to stay home today. I can't deal with leaving my room. And a lot of times I go home now still and just go sleep, or after work, or just stay in my room. And it's, people understanding it. I guess it just depends. There are people, I think, that understand it because more and more they're finding it, you know, in people. They're diagnosing it in people.
Dr. Tammy Fox, I wonder if you could answer that question. If we're doing better in more recent years on how our society is changing and the way we view those with disabilities, how we include them in normal operations of life.
I think to some extent it is changing. As a couple of callers have suggested, people with obvious visual challenges people seem to be able to accept that and understand it better. It seems like people who have challenges like autism or mental illness are left to try and prove that they have challenges rather than, and people just still seem very hung up on that we have to look for the problems instead of accepting people for what they can do. So in some ways we've gotten better. The Americans with Disabilities Act has really opened, physically, literally opened up doors to people. But in rural Iowa, we still have so many challenges with not having adequate transportation. If you have a vision impairment and can't drive, you're pretty much stuck at home relying on the charity of other people, having to constantly ask for help from other people. There's almost no means for people in smaller communities to get out. So in some ways, there are still many barriers, but I think some of the barriers have been broken down, and people are being, just having a show like this, talking about abilities is something that we just didn't talk about 30 years ago.
Greg, thank you for your call from Waterloo.
Sure.
1-866-780-9100 or the exchange at iowapublicradio.org. From Des Moines, Lana is joining us. Hi, Lana. Welcome to our program.
Hi. I wanted to talk a little bit. I have multiple disabilities, including cerebral palsy and seizures and a couple of other things. I think calling ourselves people with disabilities is the worst possible decision we could have made. And I've stated this before on various call-in programs. People apparently got the idea that handicapped referred to begging, whereas if you look at the Webster's Unabridged, it looks to gambling, which is actually a much more accurate thing. You just kind of got this by chance. But every time you call yourself a person with a disability, what you're really saying is, I'm a person who can't do something.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had people try to convince me not to take jobs because they don't think I can get to them because of my disability. I've had people make decisions on what I can do on the job, and I've had to correct them. So I think calling ourselves people with disabilities is reinforcing that every time we say the words.
Lana, let's pick up on that and get some perspective. Tony Smith is executive director of the Spectrum Network, a network that provides employment services, daily listed living assistance to adults with disabilities. Do you, Tony Smith, struggle with that word?
We don't struggle with it. We don't, in our ordinary, everyday world, we don't use it. You ask me about it. You ask me what funds us. That's the words we use. That's the language we use of funding. What you are talking about and what Lana is talking about is the real problem. The real problem is the legal system. The real problem is people do not have money. The real problem is people's perception, medication. All of those things are barriers to people's success. That's what we work with. That's what Lana is working with. What is in the way of her achieving a good life.
Mm-hmm. And so Lana, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do, but I just think the language is incredibly unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. What would we choose if we wanted to put this all in an umbrella term other than disability?
I'd use handicapped, and I'd use it proudly.
Handicapped.
Because it just simply means that it means that I've got an extra burden to overcome. Just like handicapping horses, handicapping gambling, I think it was a great term, and I think it gives you sends out the right message.
Okay, very good. Lana, thanks. You for joining us from Des Moines, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. And let's go to Iowa City. Julie is in Iowa City. Hi, Julie.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead. We've got a few minutes here. What?
Okay, I'm calling about the difficulty of getting Social Security disability when you have a mental illness that they don't seem obvious. I have depression and anxiety disorder, and I also developed other health conditions on top of that. I've been in the process since September 2006, and it's very hard. When I was 3 years into the process, I started to see articles in the media about how difficult it is for people with mental illnesses to get Social Security, and that many of them were committing suicide before they were even getting it because it would take over 3 years to even get a hearing.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy hard. All the questions and everything they focus on is like physical disability. Everything is about how much can you carry, how much can you walk. It's none of the questions, nothing is about mental illness. And they really focus on you'd get it almost immediately if I would have had schizophrenia or more breaks with reality, and they don't understand what a chronic depression can do, especially if you have difficult to treat. I was listening to the earlier caller about, how difficult it was, where, he's talking about when you can't come into work or different kinds of things, and having people understand that. Mm-hmm. And I lost my job a year or so ago because of absences. And it was a job that was unprotected. I had the job. I'm also my oldest son has autism, so I've been his primary caregiver.
Julie, we are an hour is ending, but we want to thank you that you shared the bit of the experience that you have there. And Julie, calling from Iowa City, Tony Smith, that's a familiar story to you. What we're hearing from Julie, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Give us some final words to sum this up. Talk about people with disabilities in Iowa. What needs to change?
Are you talking to me, Tony?
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm talking to you, Tony, yes.
It's not just in Iowa. It is a regard for people and recognizing that all of us have barriers, and whether you call it a disability or not, it is something that 1 in 4 people can be diagnosed with a disability at some point in their life. So whether it is a brain injury that is sustained, or whether it is something that has to do with aging or something that you're born with, it is a reality. We're part of the community. We're part of life.
Tony Smith, Executive Director of the Spectrum Network, thank you for joining us, as well as Joanne Hagen, Dr. Tammy Fox, and Heather Hackman. Thank you very much for joining us. The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins, Lindsay Moon, Alex Hoyer, and our The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Gotta go. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to